welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and sorry it's been a bit of a break. I think 3 weeks. It's the longest break I've had between podcasts in a while, actually. But it is the 24th of April, 2014, and this is episode 182 of the podcast, closing into 200. Today, I have an interview with Johnny B. Truant from the self-publishing podcast and author of gazillions of books these days. I'm sure lots of you listen to the self-publishing podcast, which is, you know, I really enjoy listening to it because the boys make me laugh. They do tend to go on a bit, though, don't they? but amusingly, Johnny says, you know, I can keep him to the point, and I do. So that was cool. What's interesting with the interview is I interviewed him on this show 2 years ago, and a lot has changed. So we talk about that and how he went from basically a one book in 12 years author to like 12 books in 1 year author. So that's quite exciting. Talking of the sort of self-publishing podcast ecosystem, lots have been springing up all over the place. There's the self-publishing roundtable. Jim Cookroll has just launched I think it's called the Sell More Books podcast, the Kobo Writing Life podcast. I'm on the latest edition of that. As I said, it's all quite incestuous, and I will be on the Rocking Self-Publishing podcast in a couple of weeks' time. So that's quite funny. It is. I love podcasting, obviously. I've been doing this for 4 years now, and I love going on shows as well. And I think it's really gone over a tipping point now, podcasting. This week, Tim Ferriss, who's one of the people that I really like, I respect a lot, has also started a podcast. So I'm finding that I need to start deciding which podcasts I listen to because there's so many. So that's quite fun. Anyway. Industry news. I mentioned last show exciting things around audio, and now it's official. After London Book Fair, ACX.com has opened up to UK authors, and I was one of the first in the early release wave. Couldn't talk about it until it was all official. So now I have One Day in Budapest is available on Audible and iTunes. Desecration is on its way with a new narrator, British voice, the lovely Rosalind. It's an awesome narration, actually. I think what's interesting about audiobooks, I don't listen to audiobooks, I listen to podcasts, but what's so strange, I mean, obviously when you read a book, all you have to like is the book and the voice of the author. Now, what happens with an audiobook is you have the voice of the author in the words and you have the voice of the narrator in terms of actually speaking it. And so you kind of have to like both of them in order to like an audiobook, which makes it doubly hard, I think. But anyway, so I will soon have Desecration. I have One Day in Budapest. I would be very happy if you listen to audiobooks. I would love to give you a review copy. So please email me, Joanna at The Creative Pen, if you would like a review copy of either One Day in Budapest or Desecration in audiobook format. What else? Well, it has been a massive few weeks, which is why there's been a bit of a delay on the podcast. And as you know, I've said before, I am an introvert. And so in between everything going on, I've been collapsing with exhaustion. I'm almost recovered now, though, so that's good. But yeah, it was funny. So I had basically 4 days straight over the London Book Fair. 3 days, I did the Monday Digital Minds Conference, Tuesday, Wednesday, basically, you know, 12-hour days with London Book Fair, and then on the Wednesday, an evening event, which I'll talk about in a minute. And then I had, excitingly, a full day filming, 11-hour filming day with Amazon for a day in the life of an author type video. I'm sure you've seen their short 3-minute videos. The latest one came out in the KDP newsletter, which was Liliana Hart, who I will also talk about again in a minute. But the one they're doing with me, they came to my house and filmed me at my desk, and I'm sitting on my Swiss ball right now, and they filmed me kind of doing back bends over my Swiss ball, doing my juicing on my bike at the London Library, outside the Grand Lodge of England, which I blow up in Exodus. All kinds of exciting things. So that film, I mean, when I say film, it will probably be 3 minutes or, you know, 4 minutes or something like that, 11 hours down to 4 minutes. That will be out May, June, hopefully soon. So I'm really excited about that. London Book Fair, wow, amazing. And I have done quite a long post about that on the blog. If you just go to the Creative Pen and search for London Book Fair, you will find that. I was very excited to meet the, they call themselves the Indie Bestseller Group, 7-figure authors. Hugh Howey is the token male, but Bella Andre, Liliana Hart, Barbara Freethy, Jacinda Wilder, who I kind of talked to more, and also Candice Hearn and Stephanie Bond, who I didn't really have a chance to chat to. But it was awesome to meet. It was great to meet Hugh, but it was particularly good for me to meet the ladies, because I'm a very ambitious businesswoman. I'm sure you have realised that. And it was great to meet other authors who are also ambitious businesswomen. I sometimes get the feeling that Hugh Howey, who is just a lovely, lovely man, just has kind of, you know, fallen into massive success, but does not have a kind of taking over the world business plan, whereas the romance ladies have business plans and you know, really very focused. So it was awesome to meet them, and I have videos with Bella Andre and Barbara Freethy on that blog post. And some of the things that I basically learnt, Liliana Hart particularly talked about the magic of 5 books in a series before you get enough readers to kind of sustain you. Obviously, the number of books is important. So I did the maths, basically to make $1 million. So someone like Barbara Freethy, who's making $1 million, and Bella Andre, if you have, you know, kind of 30 books making $2 profit each, you only have to sell around sort of 12,000 of each per year, so 1,000 a month, in order to make $1 million. I mean, that's just crazy. The fact is, you need that volume of books. Now, I don't think this is rocket science. I think we all know this. We know that the business model is now clear. And what's interesting is that realization, I've just seen today, Chris Rush on the Business Rush, spelt R-U-S-C-H, Christine Catherine Rush, at chriswrites.com. Chris has just posted her final Business Rush, saying, you know, that she's been writing on that blog, you know, about the business of being an author during this big time of change, and that she's stopping because she feels that the business model is now stable, that we know how this new world works, and therefore she has no need to be writing about all these things because she has 5 years worth of writing about them, and she can just get on with writing fiction. I mean, she already has hundreds of books, but it's essentially really interesting. And I'm going to write this blog post about the arc of the indie author, because I think there is this journey that we go through as an indie author, and it is write a book, discover self-publishing, self-publish a book, get really excited about self-publishing and want to tell everyone about it because you're so excited, then write another book, then discover you need to learn about marketing. So you learn about marketing and you want to tell everyone about it. So you blog about it, podcast, whatever. Then you write another book and realize that you really need to write more books in order to make this a viable business. And then you kind of stop blogging and talking about self-publishing and book marketing, and you just get on with writing. That's kind of, I feel like this arc is, you see it over and over again, and I think I'm on this arc, and I'm just moving into the, oh yes, I should just be writing more books part of the arc. As if I didn't know that already. So silly. I've also just put on the blog today a post about how I am refocusing my workload. I've basically rewritten my business plan around what I'm going to do more of and what I'm going to do less of, and I will be really pulling back from a lot of stuff around the creative pen that has for the last few years there haven't been a lot of. Well, I say that for the last 18 months, there has been a lot more about self-publishing. But before that, the blog was more original and there were less people talking about it. But now there's so much information. I feel like I'm really moving into talking about just this end of the journey, which is the business of being an author, and the new stuff I'm learning along the way. So I've got posts coming up around ACX and selling audiobooks, selling more on iBooks, selling more on Nook, particularly drilling down into that type of thing. So I'm definitely going to carry on blogging, carry on podcasting, carry on with my YouTube, I've stopped guest posts, so it will only be my voice on the blog, and it will be very much the rest of my journey instead of just articles that are now, let's face it, appearing on lots of blogs. I'm going to be focusing on writing more books and creating more products. So I've got the German stuff happening in the next month or two, so that's exciting. And Day of the Vikings is with my editor. I'm just editing Delirium myself, have plans for a couple more this year, so that's exciting. I will also be blogging more about the books I read, because I'm reading more books and fewer RSS, blog posts, that type of thing. I am outsourcing, so very excited that I now have a virtual assistant who at some point I will introduce. So she's doing some of the things to free up my time to do more writing. And I am also saying no more. So I'm really pleased that I can now start to just say, well, do you know what? I'm not going to do that speaking event, or I'm not going to do that, this, that, or the other, because I'm focusing on the fiction stuff. And I'm also talking about giving up Facebook, which I'm getting quite a few interesting comments on the blog about that. I've been increasingly unhappy with Facebook, and since they changed it to the paying to boost, which basically is like Google AdWords. So I am really question. Actually, it was after Charlie Gilkey in the last interview on the podcast, which was brilliant. If you haven't listened to that, I highly recommend it if you are, really considering the strategy for your business. But essentially, you need to eliminate the things that, don't fit into your strategy. Strategy is saying no as much as it is saying yes. So I'm really looking at, okay, how do I really like to run my business? And for example, I just got some nice HTML newsletter things done, and when I sent out my newsletter with some questions in, I got loads of really great email and was able to interact directly with some great readers, and that's much better for me than Facebook. So yeah, anyway, Twitter is essentially my social network, which I love. I will be continuing with that, with G+ and blogging, podcasting, video, but with the aim of writing a lot more. So yeah, exciting times. Just back on London Book Fair, I did want to also mention the brilliant event with the Alliance of Independent Authors, which was the second birthday, and along with Orna Ross, who is the founder of Alliance of Independent Authors, we had an evening that was sponsored by ACX with some live talent, indie author speakers, reading from their books. And there was a moment when I kind of looked around. Well, it was actually when I walked in. I was stunned by how many people were there. Obviously, there was a whole load of people from Amazon, but basically, the room was full of people who were either indie authors or they were supporting indie authors. So with Amazon, ACX, CreateSpace, KDP, it was a particularly Amazon party, obviously, but also. You know, there was earlier that day, there was the brilliant Open Up to Indie Authors event, which was hosted by Kobo and the lovely Diego Morano. And I had also met people from iBooks and from Nook at the fair. So what's happening is, and also I contrasted that to Digital Minds, which I went to on the Monday, which is in, you know, traditional publishing event. The contrast in the energy was just crazy. I really felt at LBF, at London Book Fair, that I live in a different reality. It's almost like my reality is a totally different one to people who are so negative about the future of reading and the industry and all of that type of stuff. So much so that I am, you know, I just feel like, oh, I don't understand it. I just couldn't understand it. Anyway, I'm kind of speechless because I do feel like it doesn't matter. We need to stop trying to convince people about self-publishing. We just need to get on with it and prove ourselves and be write quality books and focus on being awesome and attracting awesome readers and making readers really happy, and we'll just stop talking about self-publishing. I really think in the next couple of years, the phrase self-publishing will probably fall away. And, you know, it will just be a very different ecosystem. But yeah, in 2 years, 2 years at London Book Fair have just made a world of difference. It's just, I'm so excited to be living in this point in the indie history. I think that's enough enthusiasm for now. yeah. Okay, anything else that I was going to say? I just wanted to kind of say that if you are, I am at some live events. If you want to say hi, I'll be at Bristol Crime Fest 16th to 18th of May doing a panel on the Sunday morning emerging indie voices. So I want that to be a bit of a tweet up, you know, for indie authors. If you're in or around Bristol, you want to come along, it would be awesome to hang out. And I will be hanging out after that session. It's at 9:30 on the Sunday morning, and then I'll just do a kind of impromptu thing in the bar area. You know, so if you are in or around Bristol, come along to that. You can find that at, I think it's, or just search Crime Fest, Bristol Crime Fest. I think it's at crimefest.com. I'm also doing a full day workshop, mastermind workshop on book marketing Saturday, 7th of June with the wonderful Polly Courtney. And I have that on the sidebar of the blog, so you can sign up there. I'll also be speaking at the TLC, the literary consultancy, and I'm really thrilled about that because Cory Doctorow is speaking, and I'm like, yay, I'm on the agenda with Cory Doctorow. If you don't know who he is, then it doesn't matter, but it's quite funny. I always find that now, you know, people who I get excited about, like I say to my husband, oh, I'm meeting Hugh Howey today at London Book Fair, and he's like, who? Well, who's famous in our world is yeah, obviously not uber famous out there. I'll also be in New York for Thriller Fest in July. So may well try and organise something like tweet up or whatever then. So that's it's beginning of July. She says, looking at the dates. That is, yeah, basically the 7th to the it's like the 9th to the 13th or something. So that'd be cool. And then I'm actually in Toronto toward the end of July, and I'll be visiting Kobo, which I'm very excited about. And I have lots of travel booked for the rest of the year, which is awesome, as I am a travel junkie, and this is why, one of the reasons I do what I do is so I can travel and research. And I'm with my day, I'm basically doing full length books, and then I'm doing a day series of novellas. So I've obviously got one day in Budapest, and then I've got Day of the Vikings, and I'm thinking I'll do one day in New York, and all stuff like that. So wherever I go, I'm going to write a kind of day novella, and it's basically really fast paced. Something exciting happens, or lots of exciting things happen, and I love writing them actually. So I actually very happy about that. Okay, this has been an extremely long introduction, and that's my fault for not being regular enough. So I will try and get back onto the regular schedule. We have some very cool interviews coming up. I've got Jane Friedman. Who will be talking, in fact we're talking about money with Jaden Friedman, and then I've got Elizabeth Hyde Stevens, who wrote a brilliant book about Jim Henson and money and art, that will be coming up too. I've got Ryan Holiday, who is amazing, whose latest book is The Obstacle is the Way. He'll be coming on the show. I have Simon from the Rocking Self Publishing podcast talking about audiobooks and audiobook production. He has he'll have a book out soon on audiobooks for indies. I have Bob Mayer, uber indie, coming up. And very excitingly, I have David Morrell. Back in the 70s wrote First Blood, which became Rambo, and David writes across lots of different genres. I'd probably say he's literary thriller is his primary thing these days. He's just had a few historical thrillers out, but essentially I'm going to talk to David about the longevity of being an author for over 40 years, I guess, for him. Yeah, okay, talking of exciting things. The podcast is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life. So here's a short message from our sponsor.
Hi, Creative Pen listeners. This is Mark Lefebvre, Director of Self-Publishing and Author Relations for Kobo, and I'm here to provide you with a little bit of a tip for indie authors. You've often heard people say that the cover is very, very important. I know here at Kobo, our merchandisers will look at covers, and they look at thousands of covers in a single day, and they will make a judgment in a split second on whether or not that is a good cover. One of the factors associated with good cover is considering your target audience. A good cover for a fantasy novel is not the same as a good cover for a thriller audience. A good cover for a non-fiction how-to-do-it book is not the same as a good cover for a romance novel. So part of having a good cover isn't just having a beautiful design with a readable font on it that's visible in a thumbnail. It's also making sure that that cover appeals to your target audience. We provide tips like this via the blog at kobowritinglife.com, and do check us out and publish your works to Kobo's global catalog. Now back to your host, Joanna Penn.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Johnny B. Truant. Hi Johnny.
Hey Joanna, thanks for having me on again.
I know, it's great to have you back on the show, and so much has changed. But just as a little introduction, Johnny is the author of fiction across multiple genres, including the sci-fi epic The Beam, unicorn western Fat Vampire, Cursed, and The Bialy Pimps. He's also a podcaster at theselfpublishingpodcast.com, along with Sean Platt and David Wright. And I know a lot of you listen to the show, so this should be an alternative Johnny today. We're going to try and get something new. You never know.
People go to your show and to Simon's Rocking Self-Publishing when they're tired of our off-topic and NSFW.
Yeah, I'm relentlessly on topic. So, yeah. And just not funny either, or swearing. So,
They come to us when they want depravity. So
yeah, exactly. So what's interesting is you last came on the podcast 2 years ago in May 2012, and we're recording this in April 2014. Now, you had just published The Bialy Pimps, and I knew you from your previous kind of life as a sort of professional blogger, internet marketing guru. So tell us, who you were then and what has changed in the last couple of years?
Everything. Would you like me to elaborate on that? That was funny because when you were saying that and you were like 2 years ago, and 2 years ago for me right now is another world. And it was like one of those things where a lot of times you have, you know, established authors, like mostly. And I feel kind of like looking back, like, what was I doing on? I had one book. I'd written it 12 years ago, so it in theory took me 12 years to polish it up and stuff. And today, I make my full-time living as an author, and I don't do any of the stuff that I used to do. I closed the doors on the last of the Johnny 1.0, you know, online education sorts of things a few months ago. And so this is my full-time gig now, and the podcast, our self-publishing podcast, is now 2 years old. And so I mean, I'm in the same room, and I still work at home. I worked at home before, but other than that, like 100% of my workday it's revamped, it's wiped clean, and started again.
Yeah, and just tell us a bit more about what type of books you now have, and about Realm and Sands as well.
Well, Sean Platt, my partner in Realm and Sands, and I, we made the conscious decision to hop genres, which has not been universally accepted by the people who listen. But that's okay, because it's not meant as advice. We're telling people what we are doing. And because of that, we tried to hit as many little spots as we could. So this is, to us, this is sort of like, you know, Leonard Nimoy from Star Trek is known as Spock. And poor Leonard Nimoy could never really do anything else because he was always Spock. And we didn't want to be in a position where, like, our best serial at this point, our biggest world is The Beam. And in the time it took to write everything that's on my shelf, virtual and physical right now, we could have written like 6 or 7 seasons of The Beam. But instead, we made the conscious decision to say, okay, well, The Beam is sci-fi. Unicorn Western is like fantasy Western gonzo mashup. Cursed is horror. Namaste is like action adventure. What else? We wrote straight comedies. So we have 3 that are just like, they're like written sitcoms. We've collaborated with Lexi Maxwell in the erotica space. We've done nonfiction as fiction in the world of The Beam with a fictional author named Sterling Gibson. And so, who is not real, we made him up. And so the whole idea is we wanted to plant all the seeds that we wanted to eventually have early on. And it meant that we were building horizontally rather than vertically. But now we're in a position where we're beginning to really build on top of those franchises sort of all at once.
Mm. So this is, what is it, about 10, I want to say 10 series you've got going?
Well, I'm looking at my bookshelf right now. I would say we've used the term 12 product funnels is how we usually describe that. But the lines blur a little bit in that. And when we say a product funnel, it's like a product line, which I suppose most authors could just say a series or a serial.
It's amazing. So which all begs the question, you know, for people who are listening, who, you know, who didn't know you before. And the reason I asked you on the show back then, of course, is I'd spent 3 years learning from you from Johnny 1.0. And, you know, I'd bought some of your products and everything. So you were, you know, Johnny 1.0 was kind of a guru to me, which is so funny given where we are now, you know. And I feel like, you know, our podcast.
I was just thinking about that. Yeah,
it's really funny. Like things really move on. But how do you go from writing one novel in 10 years to writing these 12 sort of separate things and gazillions of words? You know, how do you do that? How do you? Well, talk a bit about the process, because I know you talk about it in Write, Publish, Repeat, and we'll come back to Fiction Unboxed. But just give us an overview. How do you do that?
Well, okay, so there's a lot of pieces to that question. And to give people context, the we just made a video a little while ago, and the line that I used that I just love, and it had a graphic that went with it, was in 1999, I wrote my first novel. In 2012, I wrote my second. And then in 2013, I teamed up with Sean. And we wrote the word equivalent of 1.5 times the Harry Potter series, which is what you're just referring to. And I think that one was, I am a naturally fast writer. That is something that is not, I don't think everybody needs to write like we do, but I do think that writing quickly relative to your own speed helps get your sensor out of the way. So there's the idea of writing fast, but because I write fast, once something clicked in terms of the way to tell a story, both storytelling-wise, but also process-wise, it was like I was just able to click them off like this. And the second major thing, which not everybody is going to have, is like you don't have, is a partner, a writing partner. So with Realm and Sands, there are two projects. I keep looking at my bookcase for reference. Unicorn Western and the Beam Worlds, I polish those after they've gone to Sean and gone through a few edits. But most of our work, I never see again until it's done. Mm. It goes, I write a rough draft. It goes to Sean for two rounds of edit and polish and rearrange. Then it goes to our professional editor and then sometimes to beta readers, but I don't see it again. And so when all I'm doing is writing rough drafts, I'm a full-time writer. So if I'm writing for 3 or 4 hours every morning and I write fast, those words pile up really, really quick.
Mm, which is brilliant. And I, I don't write with a partner, but I get to keep all the money.
Yes, you do. You do. That is true. That is a big advantage.
Yeah. And I see that. And I've talked, I've interviewed Sean and David Wright on the show as well about collaboration. So I'm not going to ask you about that. What I am going to ask you is Johnny 1.0 was a self-help guru as well. It was a kind of,
a lot of things.
He was, but he was you can be awesome. And it was about kicking people's asses into gear and, about taking control of your life. So I wonder if you could talk a bit about that attitude with, how does the mindset come into becoming that kind of concentrated fiction writer?
Well, okay, so this actually, in Write, Publish, Repeat, we have a lot of this. I sort of think of it as like a tough love or a reality-based approach. Mm-hmm. Because you keep saying I was a guru, and I flinch a little every time. Like, I understand the spirit in which it's intended, but gurus are kind of, I don't know that
in
I really want
way.
To be a,
in a good
guru.
Way.
Yeah. But I think that self-help can have that too, or motivation is it can be like it's a lot of hot air or it can be legitimate sorts of things. And one of the things that I tried to really focus on when I was doing a lot of that material was what are the things that people don't want to hear in terms of, and it usually boiled down to this is hard work, this is going to take a long time, things change slowly. And Write, Publish, Repeat is all about that. It's about, we spend a lot of time saying, look, this is going to take you a really long time. You're going to go through really long, frustrated periods. And so I think that a lot of the stuff that I wrote about when I was doing the earlier stuff has definitely translated into stuff we're doing now. And I think is appreciated by a lot of our listeners and readers because they're tired of having smoke blown up their butts with the Kindle Gold Rush crap. Mm-hmm. Or like when you see Hugh Howey, Hugh wrote a lot of books. And then he had one that hit, and he was on our show and was as mystified as anyone else would be by that's the one that took off. And I think that when people see a lightning strike success, they think, well, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the lightning strike. And our contention is, number one, you can outwork the need for a lightning strike because you just produce and produce, and they may all perform mediocrely at a mediocre level. And also, you're much more likely to have that once you've spent 5 years or 10 years or however long building up a body of work that maybe doesn't go anywhere. So I think that a lot of this is really hard work. We put in tremendous amounts of time. That's stuff that's starting to come back out.
Mm. No, absolutely. And it's funny you said that because I was at London Book Fair last week and was really inspired by the 7-figure indie romance writers, basically. And I was talking to Barbara Freethy, and she has 37 books out. And I worked out that to make $1 million with 37 books, you only have to sell about 10,000 of each book making around $2 each. And I don't, you know, we can immediately see that that's actually achievable, right? So that's a longer term success. But how long will it take you before you and Sean are at 37 books? Probably not very long.
Well, yeah, but I think that we get ahead of ourselves. So one of the things that we did, I have a few things I can say on this. Let's see if I can keep track of them all in my head, is 2013 was our crunch year. It was like pilot year. I mean, one, I didn't even mention Robot Proletariat. Like, there's that too. And so we put out so much stuff that we got ahead of our readership. Like, they, it was like analysis paralysis. I think they were like, okay, well, if you produce two books a year, then I can get excited about your new releases and anticipate them. But we're like, here, it's raining books. And so when we did that, I think that we didn't, I think we don't proportionately get the reward that we would have gotten with those same exact books spaced out over time. Now, we knew that, that we did it for a different reason. But the other thing, too, is that I think there is a time thing. And I've only been doing this. I've been full time for about, what, 6 months, I think. And I've been writing I've been writing full time. I've had a full time income, say, for 6 months. And I've been writing for about a year and a half, like, kind of hardcore. And it's been such an intense period of time. Like, how long have you been professionally publishing, Joanne?
Fiction, 2.5 years.
Right. So you're almost as new to this as I am. And it's so hard to be like, man, it feels like we've been doing this forever. But think what's going to be when we're at 10 years, when we're at 20 years. You know, this is a long-term thing. And so when I hear that, I think, yeah, we just stick in here and we keep doing what we're doing. And I mean, I'm in this for the long haul.
Yeah, I feel that too. I really, it's so funny you say that, because I look at the big names, you know, like Stephen King. I know you guys like Stephen King. Mm-hmm. And the people who are big names in the space have been doing this for 30 years, 40 years.
Right.
You know, most of them are in their 50s. So I feel the same way. I feel like, wow, I'm so excited. But you know, we got to remember we're just at the beginning, and which is very, very cool. But I wanted to ask you there. I think we're of the mind that we never, mistakes are not mistakes; they're learning experiences. Yeah. But what do you think that you and Sean have done, in quotation marks, wrong, or what have you learned from what you've done, and what are you going to change?
Well, we've gone back and forth on best ways to promote, and I wouldn't say that we've found sort of our secret sauce yet. So we completely ignored most of social media, other than just occasional Twittering, and we ignored blogging for the first year. We came back to blogging at the beginning of this year, sort of in force. And I used to write what I called epic posts, which really does sound conceited, but whatever. Like, they were big idea posts. And so we said, well, what if I took some of those? And we wrote those on our blog at Realm and Sans, and they were about something that was addressed by our books. Like, people would, because I was good at that. Like, I could get people attracted. So, like, we had one on revenge, because our book Namaste is on revenge. We had one on Are We Too Connected, which was a Beam one. And now we've backed away from that too a little bit, because it's the 80-20 rule. It takes so much time and just mental energy to write those. They're so big and involved that we don't feel like we're getting the benefit out of them. So we haven't figured out promotion. I don't know that that counts as a mistake, because it's a work in progress. Mm. I think that we probably could do a little bit more in terms of spacing out series. So, for instance, my series Fat Vampire, which I wrote on my own, I had my biggest launches to date were for number 5 and number 6, which are the last two. And I think that happened because people had time to build anticipation. They got through the first 4 and they were like, okay, well, now I'm ready. Now I'm anticipating. Whereas so far we've just been dump, dump, dump. Mm-hmm. Now the Beam is the first one where we're truly getting an anticipated second launch, and that'll be out May 1st. Now, I don't know. We've made a bunch of dumb mistakes, little and big. We just blew a bunch of money on Facebook ads recently that didn't get us anywhere. But it's hard to find those. When, I don't consider that the end. Like, we're going to keep experimenting with Facebook ads. We're going to keep experimenting with blogging.
Mm. I think it's great, because I think this is part of what we do. We're always experimenting and, mm-hmm. you know, sharing things. I'm going to come back to the podcast in a minute. But interestingly, also talking to Bella Andre and Barbara Liliana Hart, for example, they talked about book five in a series being absolutely critical, as in it is book five that takes off. And I was like, oh, penny drops, you know, because I've got Desecration, the first in another crime series, and I'm like, why aren't more people buying it? And the fact is, it's number one in a new series, so it's just the same as, you know, it's people don't necessarily cross over between series, even with one author. So this was a real penny drop moment for me. It was like, okay, so you have to get to book five, which you've seen with Fat Vampire, and the beam is so big, it's almost five in one book.
Sort of, but I can see that for real. Because another thing we've played with, not to go off on something, is the idea of serialization. We've gone back and forth on, do we release individual episodes? Or like my book, The Beam, our book, The Beam, which is, you know, this thick, a couple inches thick, is that's a season. Like that's six episodes. So it's really kind of is only one book. And so with the season two, I'm like, well, we need to get to three, four, or five, you know?
Yeah, and it's a big. I've read The Beam one, and it's awesome, and it's very big. I want to come back to that in a minute. But the podcasting. So one of the ways that we share, you know, obviously I have a podcast, you have a podcast, and we share what we learn as we go. So how do you think? But of course, podcasting is its own little time suck, and you know, there's many issues with podcasting. How do you think podcasting has been part of kind of changing your life, and do you recommend it for other people?
Well, okay, so you just asked me two questions there, and they may have different answers. I don't know that I necessarily, well, okay, let me answer how has it changed. If it were not for the podcast, I personally would probably not be doing anything that I'm doing right now. But unique to me, because what happened is, I knew Sean, and I just knew him because Sean's a marketer too. Like he was in all the same circles as I was. And so, I said, let's do a podcast, because he and I had recorded just an interview, and it was about their first experiences with Yesterday's Gone, their serial. And it was cool to be like, wow, that was fun to talk about. Let's keep talking about it. Meanwhile, I had one book, you know, what business did I have? But I, it's not like I tried to hide that. I was just like, here's my journey with these other guys, and I'll be the reality check. And so through that, through seeing how they worked and how they got past their hurdles, it was both directly and indirectly responsible for helping to change the way that I thought about storytelling and writing. And then I started working with Sean. And I've produced a pretty good amount by myself, but I've produced way, way more with my partner. So for me, it's made a huge difference. And that's not even counting the stuff that most people would normally think of. But I think that the masterminding that occurs between us, even if nobody was listening, is huge, because we get ideas for ways to do growth hacking stuff. I don't want to detour into Write, Publish, Repeat, but our nonfiction book has driven sales of our fiction. And our podcast, which is nonfiction self-publishing, has driven sales of our fiction books as well. So that's huge. Now, as to whether I would recommend it, I think that it's definitely an 80-20 thing for a lot of people. And I think it would be a mistake if everybody took away from the listening to two of us and say, I'm going to now talk about self-publishing. And then we have a ton of people talking about publishing. Like, that doesn't make sense. But I know some people have had some success sort of being like Dave. Dave is doing his Walking Dave podcast, where he's just talking about his process, you know, and it's an easy way for him to produce content and share with his fans. And that may be depending on your level of tech ability and how much work you have to put into it.
I think anything that makes people more human, because with words on a page, it's still, you know, there's still no smile, there's no sound of the voice, you know mm-hmm. more about me by listening to my voice, you know, than you right. would otherwise. And by seeing us, people get that. And I think that's a big part of doing this type of thing and doing video as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's like, oh, wow, look, that's Johnny and that's a picture behind him that looks really cool. You know, that type of thing. But on that, you mentioned the masterminding between us, you and Sean, and even if nobody's watching, but you have something going on where people can watch your masterminding and your process, don't you? Tell us about that.
You mean the next thing? Because I'm like, well, we're kind of doing that already. Are you referring to Fiction Unboxed?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So yes. Yeah, so when we wrote our nonfiction publishing book, Write, Publish, Repeat, which is Write, Publish, Repeat, not Write, Publish, Repeat, which is what everybody thinks. we people loved that, and we got a really great initial reaction. But people were still like, yeah, but how? You know. And I think people even said that, like in the reviews and stuff, they'd say, well, this is great, but how? And we're like, well, we just spent all that time telling you how. But the question was, how do you write all that stuff? I got to write, publish, repeat, but how do I get the stories out? How do I get past my blocks? How do I arrange my day? And so they'd ask, like, well, so what's your process? You outline and then you do this and what percentage of time? And so rather than fielding all those questions, we said, well, why don't we just show everybody? Mm-hmm. So what Fiction Unboxed is we're going to write a novel live in 30 days and let everybody watch everything. So it'll be a 75,000 word plus novel, like a full length novel. And I'm going to write in the mornings and I'm going to take those words and stick them up on a dedicated website so that people can see them in their raw form. Sean will write his beats, which are like a loose outline, and post those and explain it. We're going to record all of our story meetings like this between you and me. If this were between me and Sean, we'd record it and share all of those, share our emails. It's basically end to end. And we're doing it through Kickstarter, which has an ulterior motive that all of our podcast listeners know about, in that it promotes our self-publishing sort of side of our business. But at the same time, we think it'll do what Write, Publish, Repeat did and raise our profile in general. So we're doing that on Kickstarter starting April 22nd.
And where can people find out specifically about that?
When is this going to air?
Well, let's pretend it could be anybody listening anytime. So is there a link they'll be able
to? All right, anybody, anytime. Okay, I'm not actually sure what happens to Kickstarters once they're done and they go into the archive. But between April 22nd and May 1st of 2014, you would just search Kickstarter for Fiction Unboxed. Prior to that, we have an early sign up notification that's selfpublishingpodcast.com/fiction-unboxed, because we're going to have like day one bonuses and stuff. And after that, I honestly don't know. I suppose it stays on Kickstarter, but I don't know what we're going to do with it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you will package it up.
Probably. Although I got to tell you, working with Dave and as many jokes as we make about info products, I'm like, so that would be an info product, right? And would we sell it for $97? I don't know if I can do that anymore, even though that seems logical.
It does seem logical. And it is funny listening to you guys talk about that, because, you know, I have training courses for authors as well on my site. And when people want something, they're happy to pay for it. So, you know, Dave will come around, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. And I had things for sale for $97 when I was doing a lot of them.
Exactly. So I want to briefly, before I come back to the business side, ask you about The Beam. Because I've tried a couple of your books, and this is what is interesting about you guys having all of these different products, is you have some which are clearly in the humor category, of which I'm not the target audience for that.
Right.
I really like The Beam. I think it's brilliant. And from what I think you have degrees in genetics, am I right?
Genetics and philosophy.
Exactly. That's my point, is The Beam is a very intelligent book. From, as I read it, I'm like, wow, this is the educated side of Johnny, and this kind of, you know, the far more serious side of you, and then the funny stuff seems to me much lighter. So I wanted to ask you about that. Like, are you finding that all of this means you can reconcile these sides of you? You know, does this make you really happy? Or, you know, how are you reconciling all of this?
Oh, that's such a fun question. So, yeah, I mean, I, um, I went to school for molecular genetics and philosophy, and I went to grad school for a year. Like, I was getting a PhD, and now I didn't. I was on scholarship and stuff, so I don't look and say that I wasted a bunch of money. But I feel like, why did I spend all that time? Like, now I'm an author. And what's really, really cool is that I didn't intend to do any of that. It's not like I'm Michael Crichton's stuff tends to be very scientific sometimes, or was, or like Tom Clancy is very detail oriented. And I didn't set out to do that. I didn't say I'm gonna do any of that. But the first time it cropped up was actually in Fat Vampire, and I had of all things, right? So I had somebody after one of the books like email me and say, I don't think you really know what a retrovirus is because you did this wrong. And I said, no, let me explain to you exactly how it worked in the book. And they're, okay, well, whatever. But it's the sort of thing that just, I mean, I think any writer, if they're lucky, has had that experience where you find yourself going down a path and you're like, oh, well, I know how to explain that. And for me, a lot of it has been stuff that has to do with biology. What you're talking about in The Beam is with a lot of the tech stuff, I just kind of, you know, we're just like, this sounds jargony enough that we know it's kind of akin to this, and we could, like, we don't need to understand what all those little things, we don't need to know exactly the moving parts of the nanobots. But then when they're, The Beam is about the line between we as people and our connectivity as facilitated by technology. And so when they're working on things like brain, you know, beam, which is our network interfacing or anything like that, or the nature of consciousness, those are the explanations that come out of me. So there's a scene in the first one where our, this isn't a spoiler, where our upgrades dealer, because people are getting augmented, biological augmentations, like, you know, chips in their brains and stuff. When our salesman Doc goes in to get his upgrades wholesaler, and they show him to the wrong place, and it's this really high-end stuff. And then I needed to have the scientist rattle on about like how these things would work. And I'm like, oh, I know how to do this. And when we get into some of the stuff about consciousness, then that's just all the philosophy. So I love that that's a part of writing, that suddenly this is fully integrated with what I learned. It came full circle.
And I like that best. Like, for me, when I read a book, I want to learn stuff. And I feel that even though The Beam is sci-fi, I still feel there's enough of your research and, like you say, your Sterling Gibson stuff that's there that I feel like, oh, I just learned something, which is really cool. So, yeah.
Did you read Plugged? I don't know if you read Plugged.
I haven't, but it's kind of, you know, one of those things I kind of want to read because it's so interesting. But tell people about that.
Plugged was fun. So the scenario is if Sterling Gibson he's basically Malcolm Gladwell, right? If you put Malcolm Gladwell in the year 2097 and you're looking back at how things have changed, a la The Tipping Point or anything like that, or Outliers, that's basically Sterling Gibson. And so he's an author who writes in 2097, which is when The Beam takes place. And the book Plugged is, it's the tagline is how hyperconnectivity and The Beam changed the way we think. And so it's about the history of evolution of thought, but going back in the past. So I think the earliest times that are referenced are in the 70s, 1970s. And so I had to do a lot of sort of incidental research, not just in terms of what actually occurred. So there's a guy named Dennis Hope, this is real, who claims he owns the moon. He just claimed it. He's like, hey, UN, you know, like, I own the moon. Like, that's a real thing, and it's in Plugged. But then there's a bunch of stuff that obviously we made up, but that had to make sense. So something that, for example, I referred to, there's a, it's called the lattice that's over, it's like a missile net, essentially, over the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. Sorry, U.K., you guys apparently got nuked over there in the Wild East. But it protects us, and so it's like this big dome, and I had to explain how that worked. So I described it as being about the weight and thickness of aluminum foil. And so I had to say, okay, well, a sheet of aluminum foil that could cover the continent, how much would that weigh? And what would be the engineering involved to make something like that work? And so it was fun. Like, it was a research project.
Yeah, which is awesome. After the famous discussion around the pink smoke for Unicorn Western, which the objection was, don't you have to do a lot of research for Westerns? And you said, no, you don't. You can just, you know, make it up, and thus wrote Unicorn Western. But now it seems like you are really getting into research, and that that is playing a big part of the books.
We talked about this when you were on our show. I think that the word research has a lot of baggage with it. Mm. And it conjures up images of term papers and stuff. But I was in Beam Season 2, our character Nikolai goes, he's from Italy, and he goes up into the Netherlands, and then he goes over and he crosses the English Channel Tunnel and goes up into England. And so I had to research all that stuff. But that's basically me looking at maps. There's a Beam World story where we have an ultra runner who runs this 100-mile race called the Western States. And so I got out a terrain map and figured out where they went. And that's just kind of like, oh, I can imagine them there. I can imagine them that. It's just fun. And you do it for real. You go and travel.
Yeah, it's fun. To me, research is fun. It is the point. It's part of the point of writing.
I'll get there.
Yeah. Well, I want more of those. I'm looking forward to Beam Season 2. But I wanted to ask, because one of the things I'm kind of obsessed with at the moment is how people can go from being an author to running a business as an author. So being a CEO of a publishing business. And this is something you've clearly done in the last 2 years, even though you were already an entrepreneur. So how do you think people can go from being just an author to running a business as an author?
Yeah, I feel like I'm running about 6 businesses right now. So just to give you an example, we are doing, and then I'll actually answer the question. We're doing the launch for both this Kickstarter project, Fiction Unboxed, and for Beam Season 2 right now. And so what that means is we aren't just going to make the project available or make the Beam available. We want to think, what can we do? So one of the first things we did was we said in Season 1, let's pull that book and change the calls to action at the end of the book so that they say, you know, get ready for Beam Season 2 and lead to like an early sign-up list. And so we're thinking through the mechanics of that logical progression for a customer. We did a series of posts on the blog. One of the one that ran yesterday asks people to leave their in the comments their favorite moments from Beam Season 1, and we're going to give somebody a free print copy of Season 2. And so it's all about not just here's the material, which is what I think a lot of writers do, but how do I make this more rich for the consumer, for the customer and reader? How do I make them really interested? How do I bond them with us? And so I think that, I mean, for us, it takes on crazy proportions because we're running 4 imprints plus plus 2 podcasts plus a nonfiction franchise and a Kickstarter project. But I think for most people, it can come down to treating it more seriously. Like it doesn't matter what your working hours are, but have them, you know, make them regular, make them religious. I like to ask questions like, if you had a day job that you were being paid for, would you kind of show up whenever you wanted? Would you then talk about being that you're blocked? You know, I say nobody ever gets plumber's block. Like, you know, I couldn't fix your pipes in the basement because I wasn't struck by the muse. You know, like you'd get fired. Like, what a jerk. And when you have a job that you're taking seriously, you wouldn't make stupid expenses. You wouldn't say, this book that I don't really have any reason that it would sell, I'm going to spend $1,000 on the cover. You wouldn't have an open door policy with your kids if you have them, where they can just come in at any time. They have to respect your boundaries. I work with these big, huge headphones on, playing loud music with my door closed, and everybody knows not to bother me. And I think that if you consider your writing to be like a job, something where you are responsible for keeping the hours, turning out the profit, making things make logical business sense, that will help.
Mm. And then I guess my final question is, again, you are a businessman. You were running a successful online business before you were doing this. So obviously this is viable. This is a viable business, and you've seen that this is viable. So I want you to, you know, explain what, like, why did you give all of that up for writing fiction? And what are you excited about in terms of the future of this business model?
Well, I've always wanted to write fiction. So I think that some people, I hope there aren't many of them, I think that some people get hooked with the Kindle Gold Rush crap, and they say, this looks like a good way to make money. And not that I'm casting any dispersions, but that's how John Locke said in his book, he approached it. Boy, this looks like an opportunity. No, I'm a writer, and I've always wanted to be a fiction writer, but there was no viable way to do it. Hmm. It was like, okay, so I can – and I did that thing where I submit query letters, and I read Writer's Market, and just terrible. And you get rejection letter after rejection letter. And so I've always been steering toward this. Like when I was doing my other business, I was still driving all of my interest through writing. It was through personality. It was through creative ways to – even when I was doing blog installs, it was my blog that was popular, writing about things that had nothing to do at all with what I did to make money, because it bonded people to me. It made them like me. And so I've always tried to find a way to use my writing to make money, because there was no way to do it directly. And what I like about this is finally, and this is what clicked when I did that interview with Sean 2 years ago, was like, now this is viable. And it really is. It's just about building assets. It's just about, you know, you don't have to have one book that sells 100,000 copies in a month. You can have, you know, 100 books that sell 1,000 copies in a month, and you get exactly the same thing. Or you don't even need that, because you're getting 70% for most platforms. And so I don't know if I'm giving you the answer, if I'm like going off track, but it's a logical business for me. It makes sense if you treat it like a business. You asked about the future, I think, though.
Yeah, well, then taking it on to the future, if I interview you again, and I hope I will, in another 2 years, you know, who will I be interviewing then? What do you see for the next 2 years?
Well, this is always fun, because then 2 years from now, maybe I'm going to look like an idiot. But I do think, I mean, one of my, I have a friend named Lee, and he has a quote where he says, in the future, I predict that people will want to be entertained. And so when people start to talk about, will Kindles be around? Will Kobo readers, because they're our friends, right, want to be around? Will, you know, how will people be reading? Well, the answer is they may be reading differently. The rules may be different. The commission structures may be different. The laws may be different. But people are not going to stop wanting to be entertained. Like even if reading dies, like I don't see that happening, but even if that dies, you're a storyteller, right? You can tell a story in whatever medium there is. So with that in mind, I do think that I do see some trends that I would predict. I agree with Jim Kukral from Author Marketing Club, who says that this right here, maybe not phones, but mobile reading is going to be increasingly popular. We're doing some direct sales experiments now, which are very, very preliminary. But I think that's going to be interesting, because we can do some bundling. So as an author, you're sort of building you used to have to be shelved next to people, and now you can kind of be shelved next to yourself. So I think that the new paradigm is you find people. This is how people find you. They're interested in you already. They're going to the bookstore looking for you because you've built devoted regular fans. And so I think that once you have them, you open up some things like, okay, well, you can get my entire catalog, which you could buy separately for $100. For 50 on our website or something like that. So I do see expansion of maybe direct sales, hopefully, maybe through apps, mobile reading. But in general, we're just going to keep trying to satisfy readers, bond with and satisfy readers as our primary thing. And the podcast will probably be a large part of that, even though it's about satisfying writers.
Absolutely. Well, I hope that continues. And my podcast is, I think, 3.5 years old now, which is kind of crazy. And, you know, yours, mm-hmm. I think, is 2 years, isn't it?
Two years as of almost exactly 2 years. Yeah. And yours just underwent a little reinvention, too. So
yeah, I mean, well, this is the crazy thing. I think the good thing about being an author, being a creative, is that we're always changing. We're always mm-hmm. morphing into somebody else. And we're just kind of telling people about it on the way. So I'm really excited about our future. I really am.
And I also think, too, that even if you don't have a partner or a mastermind or whatever, that I mean, so there are three of us on the self-publishing podcast, and that creates a little mastermind. But I think that even if it were just the three of us, it would be a little too insular. Mm. So the fact that we talk to you and we talk to CJ Lyons and we talk to Ed Robertson and all the other people that we've talked to, you know, David Goggren and everybody that we've had on, it is a community that we're all learning from each other. So one of the things we learned from you about Kobo, you know, we weren't paying attention to Kobo. We're looking at translation. I forget who it was who really kind of started doing audio that made us say, maybe we should do audiobooks. Mm. And so those are things that may not have occurred to us because I think any one person's view can tend to be a little myopic. Mm. And so I think that having community is huge.
Yeah. And the indie ecosystem continues to be ahead of the pack. Having just come from London Book Fair, it was like I was in a parallel universe between the traditional publishing room and the indie room. It was like, wow, I'm so happy to live in my part of this universe.
I think that I think traditional publishing, there's things definitely can learn from them, but they're not agile. Mm. That's the one thing that can definitely be said is no matter who's right, they can't move as quickly as we can. And so I think in that way, we have a big advantage.
We do. Wow. Exciting times, Johnny. So where can people find you and your books online?
Selfpublishingpodcast.com does tend to be our default hub. But for our writing, it is realmandsands.com, not Roman Sands, which for some reason. We're going to be doing a big Fiction Unboxed Kickstarter April 22nd through May 21st of 2014. And we have our book right publisher, Pete.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for your time, Johnny.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.